You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon during the lunch hour, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, all six areas of the Healthful Living Model, and you can learn more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist, and I'm here today with my co-host,
Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant.
And just to remind you, you can hear this show later and all past episodes of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com. We have an outstanding show for you today. We're going to be speaking about, I mean, every week I say this, that this is one of the most important subject matters, but look around at our society today and see that something like half of America is significantly overweight, and we're suffering constantly with weight loss, weight loss, weight loss, weight loss books, fad diets, over-fixation on all this stuff. We've got images in our society forcing us and telling us that we're not okay, that we have to be thinner, and it just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. And today, we are on the line with Dr. Judith Beck. She's a PhD. She's author of a new book called The Beck Diet Solution, Training Your Brain to Think Like a Thin Person. And when we first got the opportunity to interview Judith, we thought, wow, gee, okay, a diet book, let's see what the angle is here. And then when I really got into it, I said, okay, this is precisely where we need to be coming from and precisely what we're always talking about with regard to healthful living and really the reality of our world, that what's going on in our minds is affecting everything that shows up for us in our bodies and in our physical world. Let's emphasize the word train in the title of her book, Train Your Brain to Think Like a Thin Person. She is one of the foremost authorities in the field of cognitive therapy. She's the director of the Beck Institute of Cognitive Therapy and Research in suburban Philadelphia, and she's a clinical associate professor of psychology in psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania. I also want to mention that she is the daughter of noted psychologist Aaron Beck, who back in the 60s really co-founded the area of cognitive behavioral therapy and made phenomenal strides that have been significantly impactful in the areas of depression treatment and research over the years. And I remember I first came across Aaron Beck's work back when I was first studying psychology 20 years ago, and I was becoming fascinated with Martin Seligman's work with learned optimism and understanding how our internal thought patterns, our internal habitual thoughts, affect really everything that shows up in our health and our happiness and all the things that we co-create with everyone else in the world. So I want to just welcome right on the line. Please join us to the show, Dr. Judith Beck.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And let's just start off, please share with our listeners a little bit more about your background and how this has channeled into your recent passion and your mission to write a book that people can really use to help train their minds and not be overly fixated on, you know, diets.
Well, I've been interested in dieting since I was about 16 and went up and down the same 15 pounds many times in my life until I finally put together all of the things that I had been teaching other people and found enough time and space in my own life to really devote myself to it, and lost about 15 pounds and have kept it off ever since. But the way I knew how to write the book was not only from working with people, but the same kind of distorted thinking that all dieters have are things that I used to have too.
So let's just start off with some of that distorted thinking. I mean, there's people out there listening now, I know, that have been fighting, you know, struggling with weight loss or diets and fad books for years. Let's start with some of the distorted thinking.
Well, one kind of thought that people frequently have, these are people who struggle with dieting, is I can't tolerate hunger. Mm. Now, if you talk to people who have never struggled with dieting, people of normal weight, and you say to them, when was the last time you were hungry? Usually they'll say something like, well, before lunch today or last night before dinner. And then if you ask them, well, what did you do about it? Usually they look at you in a funny way and they say, well, what do you mean? I didn't do anything. I just waited till the next meal. But if you talk to a dieter, the dieter will frequently say, well, I was hungry, so then I got something to eat. Turns out that a lot of dieters are actually really concerned about being hungry. They don't realize that it's normal, that it's natural, that it actually comes and goes.
Judith, is there anything also in people's childhood maybe that might have influenced maybe some behaviors? They had siblings and they had to scarf down their food before someone else got it. Are there other things that might influence someone's that hunger,
well,
fear?
It's possible, but we find that that dieters have it across the board, whether they had wonderful childhoods or didn't have wonderful childhoods. I think the important thing about cognitive therapy, and especially about the Beck Diet Solution, is putting the focus on what can you do today? What do you need to do today to reach your goal? Mm. And I think that when people talk too much about their childhoods, then they're really not focusing on the skills that they need so that they can withstand the hunger. It doesn't really matter why you have the idea. It's what do you do now that you have it.
Mm. That's a good point, and I think one of the things that was interesting in your book is, and we'll go into this maybe at some point later, but you kind of challenge that notion with a hunger experiment, which I think probably whatever reason, like you said, it doesn't really matter now. Someone may have this, say, fear of hunger. Right now, they can find a way to have a different experience and get past that.
That's right.
Well, and generally, I mean, when we're fixated with fear, that generally is what shows up more for us. So I can imagine if we're constantly concerned about, I'm going to be hungry, I'm going to be hungry, I'm going to be hungry, I need to take care of that need right now, 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 that my immediate thing is to take care of that need. And I'm constantly in a spiral, I would imagine, being directed by fear, not being directed by what it is I want to create.
That is what happens. And that's part of the reason why I want people to, the Beck Diet Solution is a 6-week program, and you learn a different thinking or behavioral skill every single day. What I recommend is that you not even start dieting until day 15, because there are so many important things that you need to learn on the first 14 days. One of them is that hunger comes and goes, that you can tolerate it. Another one is to give yourself credit every time you do tolerate hunger. Another one is to make sure that you eat every single thing sitting down, slowly and mindfully. And what people find is as they are trying to learn these new skills, they have sabotaging thoughts about doing these things, such as, well, I don't really feel like sitting down, or I get such pleasure from grazing. And then they have to learn in advance how to respond to these kinds of ideas so that when they're in a situation, they can make really good choices. But unless you rehearse over and over again before you're in the situation, it's going to be hard for you.
One of the things that I found very interesting about your book and doing some reading on it was, of course, there is no diet in the book. And myself being a nutrition consultant, I can tell you that I often have a lot of frustration with diet books because certainly every diet works for some percentage of the population. So then you get that percentage of the population touting this new diet as the miracle diet and everybody should do it. And then everybody goes on the diet. And of course, lots of people don't succeed because it's not the right diet for their particular body. It doesn't work for a variety of reasons. And then you have a lot of people, again, failing over and over. So what I love about your book is that it's not about a particular diet. It's about finding maybe the best diet for you or finding one of the reasonable diets out there. And, of course, that's what we as nutrition consultants do, is hopefully help people find maybe the diet that would really be best for them. But then just after you get past that part is really spending the most important time figuring out what sabotages people, because as we know, is even if you pick a diet, 90% of them fail. So how do we keep from failing? And that seems like really the core of your book. And I'd love for you to talk. It sounds like you had a bit of a struggle at first getting people to understand that notion for getting it published.
I did. It was very interesting, and I was so pleased that Oxmoor House, who finally published the book, were so farsighted about it. But almost every publisher said, well, these are wonderful ideas, but you have to put a diet in the book. You have to tell people what to eat. And I said, no, I won't do that, because I strongly believe that different diets are better for different people. And in fact, even when people choose a diet, and I want to emphasize it has to be a highly nutritious diet, they still have to modify that diet so it really works for them. So, for example, one thing that I do is I save about 100, 200 calories every single day, and I eat whatever junk food I want around 8 or 9 o'clock at night. So it becomes very easy for me, if someone has put out cupcakes in the little kitchen in my office, for me to say, I can't have that because I'm saving my junk food until 9 o'clock. It just eliminates all of the struggle. If I want, I can take the cupcake home with me and eat it then. or I can have my little chocolate bars that I have up on a high shelf in my kitchen. One of the most important things to learn is the skill of being able to plan in advance what you're going to eat, and then to learn how to talk to yourself so you can make sure you stick to that plan.
You know, that is a very interesting comment you made, because Martin and I do exactly the same thing, except we don't call it junk food, because we try to pick the healthiest sweet treat we can. But every day we go to the store in the evening and we go for a walk and we get ourselves a little something and we share it, and then we know we don't ever feel deprived. Sometimes we have something healthy, we have a mango, or but sometimes we'll have a cookie, sometimes we'll have some ice cream, but of course we go with the, you know, best quality that we can find, and we have one and we don't keep a bunch of it around. And and then, you know, I try to encourage other family members, some who may be listening, to do this, because otherwise they just feel deprived, and then, of course, they're not successful at all. So I'm glad to hear that we're not the only ones that use that little trick.
Absolutely. And you know what I frequently tell people, this is in the Beck Diet Solution too, is you're going to be deprived of something. So either you're going to be deprived of food, or you're going to be deprived of all of the benefits of losing weight. You're going to be deprived of being thinner. You're going to be deprived of better health. You're going to be deprived of feeling good about yourself. You're going to be deprived of being able to wear the clothes that you want. You're going to be deprived about how self-conscious you feel. So you're going to have some deprivation. You decide. Do you want it to be deprivation of food, or do you want it to be deprivation of all these other things?
Mm. And the thing is, what I really glean here is, like, what's going to be sustainable? You know, what's going to be a sustainable long-term solution? Because when I look at standard diet plans or diet books, they are a reaction to a symptom of one finding themselves to be overweight and unhealthy. And then they can implement, you know, that short-term solution to, you know, lose weight, and then you get somewhere. And then you know, we have this illusion that, okay, well, now I'm off the diet and something stops. But really, things don't stop, because we've just shifted our behavior for a while. Everything in our mind and our other patterns are the same, so we go right back to that way of being. What here about this book, and specifically employing, you know, your background in cognitive therapy applied to dieting and losing weight and being healthy, that really makes it completely different than anything else out there that everyone's ever tried before?
Well, there just haven't been any books that really show you step by step the skills that you need. Now, if you wanted to learn how to play tennis, you could probably pick up a tennis racket and perhaps get the ball over the net. But if you want to get good at tennis, there's no way that you can do that without having someone teach you, or having a book to read, or watching a video or something like that. How could you possibly learn those skills unless it's actually taught to you? Well, the same thing is really true in dieting. And I think the reason that people have been unsuccessful in being able to keep the weight off is exactly as you said, they're able to make short-term changes in their behavior, but unless they make long-term changes in their thinking, they're not going to be able to keep up that behavior change. So, for example, people have to change their thinking from, it's unfair that I can't eat what everyone else is eating, to something that's more realistic. It's the greatest unfairness would be if I didn't allow myself to lose weight in the way that I want to. When they have the idea, well, no one else has to restrict his or her eating. What they need to do is to go around and talk to people who have lost weight and who have maintained their weight. The way that people maintain their weight is by pretty much eating the way they did when they were losing weight.
Mm.
If you lose weight and you come to a plateau and you want to stay at the plateau, you got to eat exactly what you've been eating and exercise to the same degree as when you were losing weight.
Mm. It's really a moving towards orientation, and because I, you know, certainly talk about this with my work with clients, or whether it's coaching or really any change that someone wants to make. Once we sit and talk for a while, we realize that most of their orientation, most of their thoughts, most of what they're working on is avoiding something, or trying to move away from something, or not have this, not have that. And once we get into a conversation and discussion about it, and looking at action steps and strategies, and focusing all of those towards, okay, what do you want to create? How will this work for you? What good things do you want to be doing? It's a whole different conversation. And very simplistically, like, I'm not the nutritionist. Julie does that work. But if I'm having a conversation with someone, I always start with, you know, first eat baby carrots as an example. I mean, that's something that you can add in that's good, that's moving you towards something that will supplant automatically one of the default behaviors that's helping you to, you know, that's a detriment. And being focused towards what you want to create is a completely different place to be.
In fact, on the first day of the Beck Diet Solution, the first task that you do is to write down all of the reasons that you want to lose weight on a card, and then you read this card every day, at least once a day. If it's a hard day, you're reading it five times during the day to remind you of why you want to lose weight, so that when you see the chocolate chip cookie, you can say to yourself, let's see, I can eat, and you have this on a card too. Do I want to eat this chocolate chip cookie and have, you know, 3 minutes of pleasure, maybe 30 seconds of pleasure, and then feel really bad that I ate it? Or would I rather be thinner? Would I rather have all of the benefits of weight loss?
Mm-hmm. Mm. I know you talk a lot of, it sounds like you look at some of the beliefs people have or the stories that people tell and work at helping them get through those. Are there also some, I don't know, I find that some people just, you know, how do I explain this? A lot of people out there, most of us, have some sense of suffering or problems that often come with the beliefs or the stories that are underlying them. And a lot of people use food as a way of numbing their pain, which is a lot more socially acceptable, I suppose, in some ways than alcohol or something else. But do you find that there are people that you've been working with that that's kind of one of their strategies? And if so, do you find any particular underlying beliefs or any ways of addressing them?
Yes. A lot of people eat for emotional reasons. And they have all kinds of permission-giving thoughts, like, it's okay to eat this because I'm upset. It's okay to eat this because I'm stressed out. It's okay to eat this because I'm tired. Of course, they also have the thought, it's okay to eat this because I'm happy. It's okay to eat this because I'm celebrating. It's okay to eat this because I'm at a celebration or a family gathering or something like that. So people have a million different excuses as to why it's okay to eat something that they haven't planned to eat. And one of the ideas that they have to change is this kind of entitlement idea, if I'm feeling bad, I should eat. You know, if you talk to people who have never struggled with weight, who are of normal weight, and you say, well, when you're upset, do you eat? Again, they don't exactly know what you're talking about. And you say, well, if you don't eat, what do? And they say, well, what do you mean? If I'm upset, then I'll go talk to someone, or I'll try to solve the problem, or I'll distract myself, I'll get immersed in doing something else. They don't even think of turning to food. So one of the ideas that chronic dieters need to change is, I should eat when I'm upset. And they need to change that to, when I'm upset, I should take care of my distress in ways other than eating.
Because ultimately the eating just, of course, just makes them feel better. Just makes them feel better in the moment, but makes them feel worse 10 minutes later. So it really, as we all know, doesn't work anyway.
That's why they need to have a card that they're reading every single day. Even if they're not upset, they need to read it every single day to remind them when they are upset. And the card needs to say, I have a choice when I'm upset. I can eat and then feel terrible a few minutes later, or I can refrain from eating and do X, Y, and Z instead. And then it's very important, again, to have a plan in advance of what the person is going to do when she's upset. So she's just not at loose ends, but she's got a plan of the things that she can do.
Sure. And then, of course, we all let stress get to us, or, quote, make mistakes, or end up indulging in the sundae or the brownie or whatever it was. And what do you recommend when that does happen? Because I'm sure inevitably, occasionally it does happen. Or tell me how you usually address that.
Well, there's one day called getting back on track. And it's important for people to realize that, of course, they're going to make mistakes. In the very beginning of the book, I have a little section on why I never use the word cheat. Because when people use the word cheat, then they feel as if they're bad. Mm. And then that somehow gives them license. Well, since I cheated, I might as well eat whatever I want for the rest of the day and start again tomorrow. Mm. Which is, you know, when we talk about it now, and people aren't cheating right at the moment, they can see what an absurd idea that is. I mean, if you've cheated by eating a piece of chocolate cake, and let's say it's 400 calories, that's not going to show up on the scale at the end of the week. But if you have a piece of chocolate cake and then you say, oh, well, I might as well eat whatever I want, and then you have a soft pretzel, and then you have a few cupcakes, and then you have a bag of chips, and then you have a pint of ice cream, that is going to show up on the scale. So, again, people need to prepare for the hard times, and that's what the Beck Diet Solution does. It teaches you the skills that you're going to need before you need them, so that when you've cheated, when you've eaten something that's not on your plan, you read this card and it says, okay, I made a mistake, big deal, this isn't going to even show up on the scale, so what I need to do right now is just to start again, forgive myself and start right again.
You talk about planning ahead and making a plan for the day, for the next day, and sticking to that. Can you talk about the importance of that?
Yes. One of the major reasons why people gain weight back after they've lost weight is that they start to eat spontaneously again. They start to have thoughts such as, well, it's okay if I eat this pretzel because I really want it, or I'm really hungry, or it's just a little piece, it won't really matter. Anyway, a million excuses like that. And they've really never learned the skill of what to say to themselves to make themselves stick to a plan. So toward the beginning of the diet, what I want people to do is to write down what they plan to eat the next day, and then to follow this plan 100%. And again, to have these cards in advance that they've written for themselves, to remind themselves of why it's so important to stick to the plan. You know, if you have a piece of pretzel, let's say it's a piece of hard pretzel, maybe it's only 15 calories. So most dieters will say, well, what's the big deal? You know, that's not going to mean anything in the scope of things. And I say, no, you're absolutely wrong. It does mean something. Every time you eat something that's not on your plan, you're strengthening your giving in muscle. Every time you follow your plan and you resist that pretzel, you're strengthening your resistance muscle. And dieters have to get an extraordinarily strong resistance muscle so that when they've lost the weight that they want to lose and they're just trying to maintain, if the scale goes up by 3 pounds, that resistance muscle will be so strong that they'll be able to go back to planning and sticking to it. If they don't learn how to stick to a plan while they're losing weight, they have really very little hope of keeping the weight off.
That reminds me, Martin, of when we first met. You told me about the thing you used to do in front of the donut stores. You'd pass the donut store and have a certain belief or...
Yes, one of the I created a rule for myself that, you know, with my respect to my overall health objectives, that since I had already indicated for my life that donuts were like the worst food I thought that were out there, and I knew that that was not part of my reality. So that every time I saw a donut shop, it would remind me of what a healthy person I was, because that's just not something that I eat.
You know when I know a dieter has really turned the corner? It's when she can pass a donut shop or she can leave a party and she says to herself, I'm so glad I didn't eat that. And instead of feeling deprived, like you, she actually feels good about not having eaten it. That really shows she's changed her mindset.
Exactly. You're listening to Reality Sandwich. We are on the line today with our guest, Dr. Judith Beck. She's the author of a phenomenal new book called The Beck Diet Solution, Train Your Brain to Think Like a Thin Person. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Judith after about 2 minutes. So hang tight.
Youth, we not afraid to exercise it. Any day we rise it, yeah. So both the slaves, them are numbly without softness. Any day we rise it, yeah. Get the youth, we not afraid to exercise it. Any day we rise it. Any day we rise it, yeah. Just do you see your friends and say you're tough on your wins. Hey, you leave me car and talk about accident. You never know my got my gun in my glove compartment. Hey, when my pop it off and just what the fool got that friend. You never know, so I damn ya you just a dancing up. Call police and search up on the ends. Man, I go burn down them ends if them no cleanse. Say anything me rise it, yeah. Get a youth, we now go free to exercise it. Can be wicked and why we play with
until the get your ball. Them go book a Rastafari in the brawl. So anytime I rise it, yeah. Get a youth, we not afraid to exercise it. Anytime I rise it, yeah. Ooh. So Babylon, them are no blue without some. Anytime I rise it, yeah.
Your garments. The truth is there for who abides to see. Partiality has no place in this judgment. Remember the words of prophecy.
We are back. You are listening to KPOO San Francisco. You're listening to Reality Sandwich. And if you are just tuning in, we are speaking with Dr. Judith Beck on the Beck Diet Solution, Train Your Brain to Think Like a Thin Person. And before we get back in talking with Judith, I just wanted to comment. There were some callers that called in, and some of them specifically asking some questions about specific diets. So I'm thrilled that people are listening. Thank you so much for your comments. We're going to not get into the details of specific diets today, but if you have any thoughts or ideas for future shows or any comments for us, you're always welcome to contact us at healthfulliving.org and send us an email, and we'd love your comments.
So, Judith, I'm guessing that there's got to be some clinical research and evidence behind this particular approach.
Yes, there was a study that was done in Sweden that looked at a group of overweight people and then randomly did a randomized controlled trial where half of them were given this kind of cognitive behavior therapy approach and half were on a wait list. And what they found after 10 weeks of treatment were that the people who had received the cognitive behavior therapy approach had lost about 18 pounds, whereas the control group had lost none. But that's not really what the impressive part is. What happened was that they followed a group of patients for 18 months after the treatment, and they found that most patients continued to lose a little bit more weight, whereas, of course, the people in the control group who did not receive treatment actually gained weight during that time. You know, I'm not really very interested in just helping people lose weight. I'm interested in helping people keep off the weight that they lose.
Mm.
So clearly we're seeking a sustainable change in one's overall being. It's not simply about being fixated on the current need to lose weight.
Well, one of the interesting things is that, I lost my train of thought.
Okay, well, it'll come back to you. I think, you know, we're talking about really about gaining health and how do we shift our mindsets. Yeah, and I want to ask you, Judith, is this who's really your most passionate audience out there? Because I know that there's a range of people out there struggling with weight from, you know, severe obesity and very large issues, you know, long-stemming issues. And then there's now increasingly and unfortunately and sadly in our country, you know, younger people now getting, you know, childhood obesity and all these programming and pressure from our world telling us that, you know, we're not good enough and we have to be super thin and we have to have this unattainable body image. Who's your most passionate group out there?
Well, let me say who they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be people with eating disorders. Mm. People with eating disorders need to go see a mental health professional. Mm. So that's one thing. The second thing is that, you know, basically I think that people who don't have health problems and whose weight is pretty stable should probably just try to be happy where they are. Of course, you know, as long as they're eating in a healthy way, they should probably just try to maintain their weight. What I really want to do is to work with people for whom weight is really a problem, in that either they have a health problem or they're heading toward a health problem. And those are really the people who need it the most. There are people whose weight is in normal range. I don't think they should try to lose weight. In order to lose weight and keep it off, they're going to have to cut their calories and maintain a lower calorie level for a very long time. And if they're already eating a healthy way, why not just continue doing that?
Mm. What about diabetics? I heard just a really scary statistic the other day that something like 90% of type 2 diabetics ultimately end up needing insulin. So they're starting with a circumstance which, well, we believe anyway, it could be managed and reversed through modifying their dietary habits
That's
and orientations.
Exactly right. You know, but the problem with diabetics is with anyone who needs to lose weight is they really just don't know how. They've never been told. Mm. People have the mistaken idea, oh, all I have to do is, you know, pick up a book or something and follow the food plan that the author suggests. Well, that's just not enough for almost everybody. But and then what happens is that, it you know, they're motivated, it's easy maybe for the first week or two, and then dieting gets harder for everybody. Now, if you've already been preparing yourself with the skills that you need, you're going to be able to get through the hard period, and then you're going to find that dieting gets easier and easier and easier. Occasionally, it's going to get hard again when you're under a lot of stress or you're traveling or something like that. But then you just go back and use the same skills that you learned. What happens when people lose weight and or are trying to lose weight and they start to gain a little bit back, whether they're diabetics or not, is they begin to feel very helpless. They begin to think, whoa, this is hard. I must, you know, I thought I could do this, but I guess I can't. And they start to feel very helpless, and then they just kind of give up. And so what the Beck Diet Solution does is to prepare people in advance for the hard times, to let them know to expect hard times, but exactly what to do in those periods.
Mm. You have a lot of exercises in your book that we've talked about a little. I'd love for you to touch on the hunger experiment. I know there's been some, you've gotten some really great press, and there was a great article in O Magazine and Newsweek. And in the O Magazine, that you tell a story of a woman who sounds like she's doing very well. And this was part of her journey that was a little difficult, but I think also very enlightening.
Yes, this is a journalist who writes for O Magazine named Barbara Graham. And we started working together so that she could write the article. When I suggested to her that she skip lunch, that she go from breakfast to dinner without eating, all of a sudden she got very concerned and she didn't want to do it at all. Well, I knew that this concern meant that absolutely she needed to do it. It really indicated that she was afraid of being hungry. In fact, what she talks about in the article is that she wasn't sure what would happen if she got hungry. She thought she was hypoglycemic. Turns out she wasn't. She thought that if she didn't eat, that something terrible might happen. She might even die.
Hmm.
So what I had her do was to eat a good, hearty breakfast and to finish by 9, and then to plan not to eat again until about 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And every hour on the hour, I asked her to rate how hungry she was and how hungry she had been in the previous hour. And as it turned out, she found what is normal, what everyone finds out, is that hungry, you can even experience hunger intensely, but in a matter of 10 or 15 minutes, it goes away. Mm. And then it may come back again. And then if you distract yourself, it'll go away even faster. And it was really such a profound experience for her. For the rest of her life, she now knows she never has to be afraid of being hungry. So if she's on an airplane and they're delayed on the runway and she doesn't get dinner until 10 at night, it's okay. She's going to survive.
Mm.
If she's she's out at a restaurant, if she's traveling, whatever's going on, she doesn't have food with her, she's okay. It's such a relief, in fact, when people find out that they can tolerate both hunger and craving and that nothing bad happens, and in fact that both of these uncomfortable states go away.
Mm. Mm.
So what is someone's common experience with the book? Do they generally pick up the book, go through it all, and then begin to implement a change, or do they just start shifting things as they're reading?
You know, it's happening in both ways, and I know this because people are now blogging about it on their websites. It's really fascinating. Some people read through the entire book first and then go back and start with day one. Other people read the introductory material and just start at day one and do day one and then do day two and then do day three. Most people, I'm finding, are not following my recommendation, which is to learn the skills for the first 2 weeks first before you start dieting. Most of them are actually dieting starting on day one. And that's okay as long as they realize that it might get hard for them, and not to be discouraged if they find that they're making mistakes, if they're eating what they shouldn't, because all it means is that they just haven't prepared themselves well enough yet.
I love that idea of kind of getting the background and the skills and the ideas and everything in place before actually starting. I think that's a brilliant idea. And are you finding that that really, for the people that are doing that, that it really does offer them some value?
It does. And the biggest thing is then they know what to expect and they don't get discouraged when it gets hard. That's the biggest benefit to it.
What are some other common breakthroughs? Are you getting some feedback from people that are picking up the book? And what kind of light bulbs are going off of them?
I'm getting lots of interesting feedback. A lot of people are emailing me and saying, you know what? It feels like you're talking about me. How did you know that? So they're really reading themselves into the book. They also are just finding that the techniques that I have in the Beck Diet Solution make a lot of sense to them. They say, oh, yeah, I am having this kind of sabotaging thinking. Oh, yeah, it does make sense to me that I better remind myself periodically throughout the day of why I want to diet. Oh, yeah, this does make sense that I need to actually fit my life around dieting and exercise instead of just trying to fit it in. And for the first time, they're starting to see, oh, yeah, no wonder I haven't been successful. I just haven't known how to do it.
Well, and of course, there's always going to be naysayers out there. And if I put my mindset briefly into that perspective, some of them are going to say, well, yeah, you know, I can change my thoughts and my stuff. But hey, the world is bombarded with junky foods that are really bad for me. I'm getting all this, you know, advertising and stuff bombarding me, and I don't have any options, and I can never get the right food. And, you know, it's all that stuff that's faulting me, and my friends don't support me, and it's always, always, always something else.
That's right. And, you know, and one thing for people to recognize is that the same advertisements and the same candy bars that are even in a hardware store are there for everyone, and not everyone buys them and eats them. So the fact that they're there doesn't compel you to eat. In fact, before you put anything in your mouth, you always have a thought. You eating is not automatic. The beating of your heart is automatic. Your digestive system is automatic. Eating is not automatic. Before you eat anything, you have a thought. Now, people sometimes eat kind of mindlessly, but I give this example. Let's say you're at a friend's house, and you're sitting around the coffee table, and you're eating, and there's a plate of cookies, and you have a glass on a coaster, and there are a pile of coasters there. Well, sometimes people say, well, before I knew it, I'd eaten four cookies. Well, you know, the coasters might have been exactly the same size and shape as the cookies, but you didn't eat the coasters, did you? It's because you really were aware, to some degree at least, of what you wanted and of what you were doing.
In the book, you talk about the importance of exercise, and I don't think that that's disputed by any health people, that exercise is important for our health, our heart, all sorts of things. Of course, it also aids in weight loss. And do you have any specific exercises or recommend, not physical exercises, but mental exercises or anything to help people with exercise?
Yes. You know, the same kind of sabotaging thoughts can get in the way of exercise. Like, I don't feel like doing this. I really want to do what I want to do. Oh, it's too much trouble. I don't have time. And what I suggest that people do is to get out their weekly schedule and to schedule it in. Exercise doesn't happen. It doesn't just happen. People who exercise regularly do it because they're in a routine. They schedule it in. So that's what you have to do. My daughter, who actually works with me, has a wonderful catchphrase that she's taught our dieters, which is, you know, even 5 minutes is better than 0 minutes. What we try to do is to get people to do some exercise every day, even if it's only a 5-minute walk, because when they do that, they're saying to themselves, exercise is important. This is so important, I'm going to do something every single day. Now, sometimes people need help in figuring out how they're going to make time. And one of the things that I have people do is to write down their activities, their weekly activities, on a list and divide that list into essential activities, highly desirable activities, and desirable activities. And then they have to figure out, they have to put exercise and dieting activities in the essential category if they want to achieve their goal. And I haven't set this goal for them. They've set the goal of losing weight. If they want to lose weight, they have to put those things in the essential category, which means that there may be some other things that they had thought that were essential that they either have to do less of, or they have to postpone doing it, they have to delegate doing it. If it's hard for people to do this, and whether it's hard or not, one of the skills that they learn in the first 2 weeks is to find themselves a diet coach. This is just any supportive person, a family member, a friend, a coworker, you know, someone who goes to your church or synagogue, a neighbor, someone who you've met at a community weight loss group, can be almost anyone. Doesn't have to be someone who's had any experience with dieting. Does have to be someone who's really supportive, someone who's going to help you solve problems like figuring out when you're going to have time for exercise, and someone to whom you can be accountable. So you know you're going to have to call that person once a week and report on. You don't have to tell them how much you weigh. You have to tell them, though, how much your weight changed during the week. You have to be able to say, I lost a pound and a half, or I gained 2 pounds. What often stops dieters from eating things that they shouldn't is this idea, you know, I really want the scale to go down. I don't want to have to call my diet coach and say that it went up. Frequently, that's enough to get them not to reach for those cupcakes and brownies and pretzels.
And I'm guessing it's a good idea that your diet coach not also be your binge buddy.
That's a really good idea not to be.
Because we can often find ourselves in social situations, whether it's family or friends or certain people, that where part of our socializing is eating.
In fact, it is for most people. And there was some research that showed that if you eat with one other person, you're going to eat, I don't know, something like 25% more. If you're eating with a crowd of like 8 or 9 people, chances are you're going to eat 50 to 100% more. Because when you're with other people and you see other people eating, you have this sneaky, sabotaging thought, well, it's okay if I go off my diet plan. It's okay if I eat like the other person. If she's eating like that, then it's okay for me too also. And the answer to that is, yeah, it's fine if you eat like the other person, but don't expect to get to your goal. If your goal is to lose weight, then you've got to stick to your plan. You always have to have your goal in mind.
You talk a lot about the importance of planning everything ahead of time and really sticking to that plan. And can you just explain? I know in one of the stories you talk about, you know, somebody substituting one green vegetable in their plan for another one, and you know, why is that a big deal? But I'd love for you to talk about the mindset of that a little.
Sure. At the beginning of your diet, when you're really learning how to diet, it's very important to try to follow the plan 100%, again, so that you can build up this resistance muscle. And that's why I don't even want you to substitute food unless you really have to. I want you to be able to say to yourself, okay, I'm going to eat the food that's on this plan and not eat any food that's not on this plan, no matter what, you know, as long as it's under my control. Later on, as you get better and better at dieting, and certainly as you're maintaining, you still need to have a plan, but you can have kind of a general plan. So you need to know, okay, so generally for breakfast, this is what I'm going to have. And frequently people will have maybe 1 or 2 or 3 different kinds of breakfast that they have. They don't eat an unlimited amount of food for breakfast. They usually pretty much stick to the same kinds of things. And this is pretty much what I'm going to have for lunch, and this is pretty much what I'm going to have for dinner. And then it's fine to substitute. So, you know, for dinner, you're going to have maybe some kind of complex carbohydrate. You're going to have a lot of vegetables, and you're going to have some protein. It doesn't really matter what protein it is, as long as it's, you know, about the same calorie count. So the portion sizes may differ, whether it's chicken or beef or fish or something like that. You know, you're probably going to have a green vegetable, and it doesn't really matter then whether it's cauliflower or green beans. But at the beginning, I do want you to learn the skill of being able to stick to your plan 100% so that 10 years from now, and the scale goes up by 3 pounds, you'll be able to go back and start planning your food again and sticking to it 100% until you lose those 3 pounds.
So I love at the beginning how you talk about the diet, no matter what diet you choose, the one important thing is that it needs to be nutritious. And I think that since we're not talking about particular diets today, I think that that just is a really important information for everyone to know. You know, for example, I just think a few guidelines, you know, I wouldn't personally do any strict diets that eliminate entire food groups or that allow you to only eat soup and grapefruit or something, because obviously that's not sustainable over time, and that is not going to help us figure out how to build those muscles and make good choices. And of course, even things like fat, they're very satisfying, they're nourishing, they have important properties. So a balanced, well-balanced, nourishing diet is going to provide people all of the nutrients they need, so they're not going to be hungry or craving things all the time and be able to get everything they need. So
I agree with you. You know, one of the things that I found is that oftentimes people aren't eating enough protein at their meals, and they're also sometimes eliminating fat instead of having a little fat in their meals. And it's so important, you know, as you say, to have a well-balanced diet, and especially to have those kinds of foods at your meals to try to minimize hunger. So, you know, we don't want to eliminate hunger. That's the only way to eliminate hunger is to eat every single time you have a hunger pang.
Right.
So we do want you to learn how to tolerate hunger. On the other hand, we don't want you to be more hungry than you need to. That's why you really need to make every calorie count. And sure, you can lose weight on, say, 1,200 calories of Twinkies a day. You can lose weight that way, but you're going to ruin your health, and pretty soon your body's going to rebel, and you're just going to start eating out of hand again.
Right. And while some cravings are, they're like you said, they're just cravings that come and go, but there are certain biochemical cravings that happen because of, you know, if someone's eating only sugars during the day or only carbohydrates and their blood sugar gets really low, they're going to have, you know, a lot more difficult time avoiding that craving. Or if they never eat any fat, they're going to have a much harder time avoiding those potato chip cravings because the body is really starving for certain nutrients. So I think something well-balanced is really important for that.
And again, sometimes in order to get people to accept that, you have to get them to change their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So their thinking is, well, I know I have to restrict my eating, but I should be able to eat whatever I want within this calorie allotment.
Mm.
And they need to change it to, if I want to reach my goal of losing weight and keeping it off forever, then I need to spend my calories wisely.
Very good point. Mm. Do you have any, in our last minute or two, do you have any success stories that you can share?
Well, one of them is a diet group that we're running right now. Maria, as of yesterday, had lost 51 pounds, which is really terrific. She went from a size 24 to a size 14. And one of her favorite techniques is the no-choice technique. Do we have a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. I bet you don't give yourself a choice about whether you brush your teeth in the morning or not.
Right.
You don't even think about it. You don't struggle with it. You might not feel like brushing your teeth, but you go ahead and you do it anyway because you have put brushing your teeth in the no-choice category. Well, what people have to do, and Maria got really good at this, is putting any food that wasn't on her food plan in the no-choice category.
Mm.
And so she sometimes goes through the day, depends on kind of what day it is, but saying to herself, oh, my coworker just got an Italian hoagie for lunch. Well, no choice for me. Or she passes by the snack machine. She says, no choice. You know, she goes home and her kids have brought home some candy from school, and she says, no choice. But it's really wonderfully liberating once you really get good at this no choice skill, because it means you're not struggling anymore over what to eat and what not to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You just accept it.
Right. You're not negotiating with yourself all the time.
That's what's painful, is this negotiation.
Right, right. Well, we are listening to Dr. Judith Beck, the author of The Beck Diet Solution, Train Your Brain to Think Like a Thin Person. And I wanted to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Now, where's the best place for folks to learn about the book and purchase the book?
Oh, on the website, www.beckdietsolution.com, they'll find out all about the book. And, in fact, they'll find stories about Maria and our other dieters on the blog there. The book is available at pretty much every bookstore and online and places like that.
Thank you so much for being on with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
What an amazing conversation. I mean,
yes.
I just want to underscore that the that really it's all in our minds and what we do with our minds and what we do with the habitual patterns of our thoughts that affect everything that shows up for us in our world. And if we can begin to learn to interrupt those patterns and shift them in ways that support us, then we can completely create anything we want. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to weight loss, we know again and again that when people are so fixated on weight loss, they're such in a fearful state, and which really just detracts from them employing their own resources towards helping themselves. Mm-hmm. And if they can interrupt that and shift that, they can really create a sustainable new way for themselves through which losing weight or moving towards a healthy weight just becomes a natural process.
Mm-hmm. It's really the difference between sabotage and success.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you are listening to Reality Sandwich. You can get this show on our website for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. And you can find out more about what Martin and I do, our nutrition and different coaching services, at healthfulliving.org.
This has been Reality Sandwich. We're on every Thursday at noon here on KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. We'll hear you next week. Thanks for listening.